Welcome to the Feminist History Party you've been waiting for. This is Nevertheless, She Existed. This is the podcast about women of history who were underappreciated, overlooked, or sometimes completely forgotten about, like me.
This podcast features stories recorded live in New York City at Caveat, your favorite speakeasy that gets you a little smarter and a little drunker on the Lower East Side of Manhattan.
Or a lot drunker, in my case.
Mm-hmm.
Each month, we do a deep dive into a little portion of women's history with a series of larger-than-life stories about women who definitely should be in your damn history books.
In your damn history books.
My name is Molly Gaby. I am a comedian, abortion doula. I have the confidence of Megan Rapinoe with the skills of a pencil eraser.
My name is Kylie Holloway. I'm a comedian, a producer here at Caveat, and sometimes a tour guide at the Metropolitan Museum of Art. I like to think I have the pizzazz of a Simone Biles floor routine, but the gravitas of Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
Okay, well, I didn't know we were allowed to use big words on this podcast, so I'd like to change my answer later. We'll edit it in.
We'll do it in post.
Great.
This is the fourth and final episode of our witches series, and we're going out with one hell of a hex and a bang. On this episode, you're going to hear about Mary Steichen Calderon, the grande dame of sex education. She was an abortion advocate, a sex educator, and the medical director of Flippin' Planned Parenthood. And Molly is amped.
I'm so pumped. But first, I want to talk about infanticide.
All right, Molly. I promise, guys, she's super fun at parties.
I am. Okay, I'm sorry. I really have to do this, but stay with me here. This is going to track. Okay, so a funny tactic has been taken up by some really awesome Republican politicians in the war against abortion. And what they've been doing is trying to pass bills with crazy, outlandish names, like the Born Alive Survivors Protection Act. Okay, so the name in itself is a straw man fallacy. It's a common tactic that they use. So it's a straw man fallacy in that it presents an argument that they manufactured and made up and then proposed a solution to. It's kind of genius, really. I mean, Kylie, would you want to vote against the Protections for Puppies Against Murderous Scones Act?
Absolutely not.
Good.
As you patriot.
Yeah. And also, it's horrible that baked goods are becoming sentient and killing puppies.
Always.
Always. So this is a deliberate attempt by them to distort reality, to demonize women and doctors. And I do mean demonize, literally. Anti-abortion advocates continue to peddle the idea that abortion is devil worship.
When the Reproductive Health Act passed in New York this year, many headlines proclaimed that Satan had a stranglehold on the city. Abortion proponents are nothing more than pagans and heretics and witches driven by bloodlust. Guilty! an article from the Christian Post actually said it best. It compared ancient pagan rituals of child sacrifice to modern day abortion. Nailed it, guys.
While we can laugh at the absurdity of rhetoric like this, we really have to remember that it can have violent and fatal consequences. It's most commonly the religious fanatic who feels empowered to, I don't know, bomb a clinic or shoot an abortion provider because, hey, it's the literal devil at work here. And what is more righteous than destroying the devil himself? And as a queer abortion doula and as a woman who has had an abortion herself, I'm pretty confident that were this another time, I would definitely be taken to Drown Town. First class ticket to Drown Town.
So people who knew how to control their reproductive lives with contraceptive methods and abortions were a huge threat to the established religious order. Sex and witchcraft have been obsessions of the Catholic Church since the Inquisition. For as conservative and innocent as these guys claim to be, they sure as shit were obsessed with the concept of witches having orgies with demons.
Would not stop talking about it. Mm. Guys, you're totally obsessed. Really, but on December 5th, 1494, Pope Innocent, nice name choice.
Nailed it,
dude. Issued a decree stating that a little birdie told him that men and women were using spells that allowed them to, quote, beget not, nor women conceive. I know, the terror. The terror. And you can bet your ass that the little birdie he was talking about was none other than the dork of the Dark Ages.
The malicious, maniacal monk himself, Heinrich Kramer.
The dork. Dr. Dork is in. He's the biggest dork of the century. Centuries.
Author of the Witch Hunt Manual.
And thinly veiled MRA Manifesto.
The Malleus Maleficarum.
Mm-hmm. Real talk. All of this, literally everything we've been talking about, comes down to sexual freedom. Today, as it was hundreds of years ago, there's apparently nothing more terrifying than a woman who has sex just because she wants to. The terror.
I know. In which case, call me the terror of New York City.
Which case, huh?
We have one last person up on the stage for you. I'm so excited for them. Their name is Natalia Petrozella. They are a historian at the New School. You've seen them on the History Channel. You've heard them on NPR. And they have a podcast, which you should check out, about history called Past Present. Please give it up for Natalia Petrozella.
Okay. How's it going? They give you like six real entertainers, and then they're like, and now we'll bring out the history professor to close out the night. Don't worry, I promise this is good. All right, witch, please. Let's take it from here. All right, I want to tell you about a lady who was not only called a witch, she was called Mistress of the Devil. She was called Misfit, Prostitute of Hell. She was called a Dirty Old Grandmother. She was called a moral degenerate. She was called a communist libertine witch. And one of the letters, which I consulted in the archives, I really saw all these letters. I promise you they exist. I saw them in paper, said, "You are bound for Hades, where you will have molten steel poured into you from two directions, and where your diet will be pus, excretions, roaches, maggots, and spiders." Really nice stuff, right? Okay, so who was this lady? Well, she's the only lady that you're hearing about tonight who's from the 20th century. She died only in the late 1990s. And this is her. She does not look like someone who would merit that kind of vitriol in those letters, right? So here's who she is. Does anyone know who she is? No, I didn't think so. All right, good. Phew, that's like one of my special things I have for you. So this is Mary Steichen Calderon. She was born in 1904 into a rather bohemian family. Her dad was actually a very famous photographer. You might know Edward Steichen. So they grew up in this kind of literary, artistic world. She spent the first 10 years of her life in Paris. And when I say bohemian, you can kind of picture that artsy milieu. But I'll tell you one thing that was not bohemian about her family: their attitudes about sex, especially for girls. To really like put a fine point on it, her mom made her go to sleep with metal mittens on her hands so she wouldn't masturbate at night, all right? How bohemian is that? Well, anyway, that made a mark on young Mary. They moved back to the United States. She went to Vassar in 1921, all women's college at the time, studied chemistry, graduated, wanted to go to medical school. Think of the time she's living through, right? Women's suffrage, gender roles are changing, women are going to college, Planned Parenthood, which would prove very relevant to her life, actually starts a few years earlier. So there she is in this world. She gets married very young, and then she gets divorced. And she gets divorced based on what she called fundamental problems of sexual repression in their marriage. So those metal mittens made a real mark on Mary. So did this sexual repression, which limited her and her husband from really connecting. So she goes on to go to medical school, get her master in public health. By the way, Misfit Prostitute from Hell was a joke on Master of Public Health, MPH. It took me a while staring at those documents to get it, because I'm like, why are they underlining MPH? I get it. It's her degree. Then she goes on in the early 1950s to take a job that she said no man who was qualified would ever take this job. She becomes the medical director of Planned Parenthood. So now you can imagine where some of that hate mail and all that witchy hate started coming from. So she goes on to do that. And she, one of her big achievements actually was that in 1964, she got the American Medical Association to lift a ban that they had on prescribing the birth control pill, because that had just become legal in 1960. Now, like, if you don't have a real strong sense of what that era was like, it was so kind of fraught to go and ask for a prescription for the pill at that point that one person I interviewed for the book that all this research is part of, she told me, "You don't understand. Like, I went to my doctor and I said, I need birth control. And it was legal at this time. And the doctor said, 'Young lady, the best thing you can do with that pill is hold it tightly between your knees.'" right? Yeah, for real. So anyway, so she got the AMA, the American Medical Association, to lift that. And then in 1964, a little before, she got the idea and she was like, you know what's wrong with this country? You know how we can make sure no children wear metal mittens any time again in their life? What we need is sex education. And so she became a pioneer of sex education in the United States. She started something called the Sexuality Information and Education Council of the U.S., SECUS. You might have heard of it. It's still around. And she went around basically encouraging schools and educators to do something that doesn't sound that radical today, to basically push back on the very little sex ed that exists then, which was basically about like, girls, this is how you grow up to be good wives. Boys are going to want to do a lot of heavy petting with you. They have these urges. No mention of female urges at all. You've got to like keep them at bay, have a boyfriend, don't go too steady. And for boys, it was like masturbation. It was the modern day metal mittens, basically. Like masturbation is going to make you sick and perverse. Homosexuality, even worse. You know, you got the picture. So she went around saying, what we need is open conversations about sexuality, because sexuality is part of everybody's life from the day that they're born. And she was she wanted to become an actress. So she had this great, like, performative personality. And she would start a lot of lessons. She would say, okay, everybody, what's a four-letter word that ends with K and means sexual intercourse? Everybody would giggle. What is it, people? No, it's talk. And you know why she would say that, you dirty people? She would, and I love how you all were like, fuck. Like, no one was like, wanted to scream it. It's talk, because she said, look, every interaction we have is sexual. We are sexual beings. It's not this dark, dirty thing that happens over there. The way we interact with each other is as sexual beings. So you can imagine what might have happened when she's going around 1964. She starts this organization. That's where all that hate mail comes from. And that's part of like files and files and file folders of hate that she specifically got as the kind of figurehead of SECUS. So what I want to point out, though, is it wasn't just about her. Don't worry, I'm not going to read this to you. This was one of the many newsletters in one town. This is from Anaheim, California. I don't know if any of you are from there. They had a very famous battle over sex education. And to give you a sense, it wasn't just Mary Calderon as a crazy misfit prostitute from hell. It was sex ed, embodied by Calderon, will turn America into Sweden. Sex ed, it says Sweden up there. Sex ed is a plot by UNESCO, by the World Health Organization, by the National Education Association. They're coming into your families, and it's not sex education, like how to understand being a sexuality. It's techniques. You see that up there? They're teaching your children how to have sex. And so one of the bullet points here, this went out to parents, it says, if your son came home upset because he had learned every known deviant sexual behavior and dirty term used for it, would you accept what Mr. Austin, the principal, told me? He would have learned it in the alley anyway. And so this is like part of this sense among a lot of people on the right that sex ed was part of a vast communist conspiracy to turn children into sex slaves so they'd be primed for communist takeover. I kid you not. I literally wrote the book on this. Document after document, town after town. And she really was a figurehead for it. So what happened to her? So here's a prettier pamphlet. This sold a million copies, no joke, by Gordon V. Drake of the Christian Crusade. She figures in here, so does SECUS. And the idea was, they took God out of schools and they put sex in. This is like prime sexual revolution time. And so I'm just like giving you some highlights from her life here. But what ended up happening to this lady? Actually, it's sort of sad. She became so controversial. SECUS kind of backed away from her. And she was honestly sick of getting death threats and being called a witch and all of these terrible things. And she ended up leaving SECUS. And she ended up actually still working on sexuality, but she did what a lot of people consider was very uncontroversial. She was writing columns about sexuality for elderly people, which nobody wanted to hear about. And so they all kind of left her alone. But when I started the research for this book, this is like way back in 2003, I was reading those letters. And what was interesting about them was like, how crazy. Can you believe that this badass woman was getting called a witch and being threatened, and the Planned Parenthood was even being threatened in its existence? How far we've come. And now 15 years later, I get called to do this thing, and I'm going back to these same sources, some of which I haven't looked at for like almost a decade. And I'm like, oh my God, like, have we come so far? Have we really? And so I hope that I can bring attention to her life a little bit, both to feature the fact that it wasn't just in the 17th century, the 16th century, the 13th century that women were being called witches and being maligned for stepping out of their roles and challenging people around sexuality and gender and all of these things people get really nervous about. It was happening in the last century, and the battles that she fought are still very much with us. So I hope she's inspiring as you carry forward in the battle that I think we're all in together. Thank you very much.
That was Natalia Petrozella celebrating Mary Steichen Calderon. Natalia is a scholar, writer, teacher, and activist, an associate professor of history at the New School, and author of the fantastic book Classroom Wars: Language, Sex, and the Making of Modern Political Culture. Honestly, give it a read. It's very good. And with that, we have come to the end of our glorious exploration of the wonderful witchy covens of yore.
You guys, I wish we could say that these witch hunts ended in Salem in the 1600s, but if I said that, I would be a big fat liar.
And we are not liars.
We are not liars.
We would never lie to you.
Not to you.
Look at us.
Look at us right now. Where are we? Imagine we are standing in front of you.
I have brown eyes. We would never lie to you.
Never. Unfortunately, it is still very present in our political landscape and in our perceptions about women to this very day. And America has seen many different offshoots of the OG witch hunts.
We have had the Red Scare of the McCarthy era and its obsession with rooting out any socialists.
And of course, the Lavender Scare, the decades-long crackdown on gay people to purge them from civil society and public view.
You can see the parallels pretty clearly here. Hysteria driving movements to scapegoat and punish anyone who would be identified as other.
There's basically poop still everywhere. Everyone's freaking out and needs someone to blame.
Yes. But these days, some of the men who have been confronted with the reckoning of the Me Too movement, and even some in the White House, have a funny habit of invoking the term witch hunt to describe any criticism of themselves that they see as unfair.
You can't take that.
Yeah, witch hunt is our thing.
It's ours, okay?
It's been ours for thousands of years because you gave it to us. Don't give us this bullshit,
yeah,
okay?
We made it cool. You can't steal it now.
It's ours, like, great hair, like Lizzo.
And chicken pot pie.
Sorry. Witchiest food of all.
Yeah, it's so gay.
Today, it delights me to no end that the practice of witchcraft and the term witch itself is being resurrected and reclaimed to fight the very injustices perpetrated by witch hunters for hundreds of years.
Mm-hmm. Actually, Kylie, just this week, I am going to go fight an anti-abortion group, and we are organizing covens to place hexes on this group called Operation Save America while they are protesting in front of an abortion clinic.
Molly, I'm not making a joke here. You actually inspire me a lot.
Oh my God. I'm taking that to the bank and to my grave.
You should.
That's amazing. And we can't forget about those amazing witches in New York City who got together to place a communal hex on Mr. Brett Kavanaugh.
We love you, Christine Brazzi Ford.
Love you.
Witches of color, differently abled witches, trans, non-binary, and queer witches are getting together in covens all over the country to fight prejudice, discrimination, and honestly, just to have a damn good time together.
Oh, hell yes. But also, maybe even more importantly, they get together to summon the power within them to heal, using witchcraft as an act of self-care.
So sage your house.
Take a bath.
Light a candle.
Meditate.
Read a poem.
Levitate. Yeah, that's right.
Which, when you are marginalized and oppressed, is a deeply radical and, I'll be honest, magical act.
Totally.
So shout out to all our fellow witches in Drowntown out there. We love you.
Yeah, we love you, but we gotta go home and feed our pet penis. We left him alone all day, and he's probably torn up the couch by now. Love you guys.
Bye. Nevertheless, She Existed is produced by me, Kylie Holloway. Our editor is the fabulous Paula Pickering, and our executive producers are Ben Lilly and Kate Downey. They're fabulous, too. Our theme music is Wasting My Time by Thick. Nevertheless, She Existed is a production of Caveat. Follow us on socials at CaveatNYC and head to our website, caveat.nyc, to see upcoming podcasts as well as live events. You can follow Molly at Molly Gaby and Kylie at There's a Holloway. See you next time.